Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, you're banged up. I'm banged up. I kind of just feel like we should just phone this one in more than usual.
Just kind of coast through. Play 20 minutes, negative six on the stat line, quiet.
Here's how smart I am. I wrote a recap Sunday morning for the Wolves Heat game and just never posted it. Never hit publish. Wrote it, wrote the whole thing, and realized this morning I was like, oh, I never published that.
That makes the text message I sent, I formatted to you and never sent seem less stupid now. Send Zach a, I didn't send Zach. I had lined up a text message to let Zach know, like, oh, hey, I'm not going to be available on a podcast tomorrow. Like, yada, 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 yada. And then the next day, Zach was like, ready to pop when you are, Matt. And I was like, what? What is he talking about? Like, did he not get my text? And then I looked at my phone. Yeah, just sitting there, just hanging out. Just like a Ty Lawson three-pointer, just never fired.
If for some reason I had gone to our like text conversation, our previous text conversation, just saw that bubble there for like 9 hours, I would have been so, right. I've been so confused. Like, Jesus, what is he typing to me?
I'm writing you the notebook is what I'm doing. So, yeah, fun games last night. But do you want to start with Adam Silver?
Yeah, you know what you. That text message that you never sent could have divided us, but you know, may not be divided anymore. Divisions.
The league. Now you're just showing off. Now you're just, that was a heat check transition is what you just dropped.
Oh man. Play like I coached last night and then we played our usual like Monday pickup run. And I just had this dirty, like just rise and fire 30 footer, no dribble, just triple threat guy on me. He backs off a foot. Rose up from 30, knocked it down cold, and it was like such a random shot that went so cleanly through the net that the entire like game, like those guys were like, whoa, like I can't believe he just shot that and hit that. And then the rest of the night, threw the ball to the other team, missed a layup, missed a bunch of shots, did not
just throwing the ball at the rim.
Yeah, peaked at the wrong time of the night, and then in the last game, everyone's exhausted. I mean, just truly exhausted. It's such a bad last game that we were only going to 7 by ones and twos, and we're up 6-2 or something like that. And there's a steal, and it's just me and another teammate on a breakaway. And he threw the ball off the backboard to me.
Huh.
I'll let you guess how that ended. It did not end with a basket. I can tell you that. We eventually won the game, but it was one of those moments where I went to jump for it, and not that I would have come close to doing anything with it, but I could have. I mean, it was an easy lay-in. Went to jump for it. My legs just said, "No, you're done. You know, there's no need to get off the ground."
Did the ball go over your head?
No, I caught it. I put it up off the rim, and it just didn't come close to going in. Like I think I just went right off the top of the side of the rim. Like didn't actually put it towards the middle of the basket at all. It was amazing.
At least you're banged up today. You said you got a shoulder injury.
Yeah, I somehow hurt my shoulder.
But at least yours is like activity based. I just woke up one day and my foot's jacked up. Like I have to go in, I think, for an X-ray because I think I had a stress fracture from blogging, which is going to be the most pathetic injury in the history of man.
Stress fractures are going around. Oh, so sad about Quincy Pondexter. That sucks.
Yeah, he's such a good dude too.
Yeah, he's such a good role player. Such a good guy.
They're screwed. Like, and this is, I mean, it's the worst case scenario for the front office too, because if you're the front office, you want to know, okay, is this team good, or did it hit the apex? Was last year it? You know, great couple of years, really good team, made the Western Conference Finals, got its ass kicked by the Spurs. That was it. You want to know, because then you can be like, all right, let's go trade Zach. Well, let's clear some space. We'll re-sign Mark. We'll build a faster, more versatile, more efficient team that's in the model of what we think is what we want to do.
Yeah.
But now it's going to be like, we don't know. Like they could still be good. We don't know. Maybe they do just need a shooter.
I mean, I never thought he was a shooter, and I'm definitely not buying the 2-for-2 he was last night. But any chance Jamal Franklin breaks through here? I know he doesn't give him the same thing that Pondexter did. He's smaller. They're not even close to the same type of player, but any chance that he can provide a little energy off the bench? That's a no. I'll just take that as a no.
Well, here's the thing. I like rookies. I just don't know. I don't ever find veteran co- I don't ever not even veteran coaches. I don't ever find that on veteran teams, rookies almost never get time. It's why Doc playing Reggie Bullock is so impressive. Like,
yeah,
when a veteran coach has a contending team, and not that the Grizzlies are contending, but we thought they were going to be, they're built as a contender, and he's willing to trust young guys. It's one of the most impressive things about Doc Rivers is that he's not like, I can't trust you. He's right. Actually like, no. You can play. You can play. You'll play. That should be how it is. But instead, most coaches are like, nope. I mean, Thibodeau, like, Tibbs is playing Mike James. I don't care how bad Marcus Teague is. He should be playing. Mike James should not be on the roster, let alone playing. Just shouldn't be. But they trust veterans.
Mike James just ends up playing over guys that you really like.
Mike's a ninja. That dude is a ninja for roster spots.
He's a guy that should not. I mean, I went off on this rant about Aaron Brooks a couple of weeks ago, but Mike James is so much worse than Aaron Brooks is right now.
So much worse than Aaron Brooks.
It is astonishing that Mike James is still on rosters.
It's also astonishing that the NBA might get rid of divisions.
Oh, right. We were talking about that. Right. We were talking about that.
Let's circle back around.
Let's double back.
So yeah, Adam Silver said on the launch of the NBA's XM radio station, which I will never listen to because I can't afford XM radio, that they are the competition committee will review the role of divisions in the NBA.
Yeah.
And the logical question that everyone is now jumps to from then is, why not go further and just do conferences? Like that's like the quiet, like everyone's like, well, that's great, but couldn't we also get rid of conferences? Because nobody really wants the East in the playoffs at all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could. I don't know. The idea of getting rid of divisions, I like. Because really, there's not a lot of sense to it.
It just creates embarrassing banners. That's all it does.
It really does. And I know you have to hang something up in your arena. But there is nothing more like small town, small time than like a division banner up in the rafters. And I understand, like, I'm pretty sure the Timberwolves have one. I don't know. I sit in front of them. They're to my back, so I don't look up there all that often. I'm sure they have a 2004 whatever division they were in banner up there.
It's an insult to the fans' intelligence, I feel like.
Yeah, a little bit.
The Nuggets hang theirs in the practice facility, which I like.
That's fine. That I'm cool with.
You know, and I like it mostly from the perspective, not for the players to be like, yeah, I remember last year when we won the Northwest Division, but to be like, they won the division in like 88? Like, I don't remember that. Or, you know, just to provide like, wow, they've actually won a lot of divisions. Not in Denver necessarily, but in general. Like, I think that's fine. But yeah, I don't see the need for it. If you want to build rivalries, the best rivalries are built like Dallas, Miami has a great rivalry. They're not in the same conference. Indiana and Miami, I just got done talking about. This is a great rivalry, and I don't give a damn what LeBron says. This is a great rivalry. And that one's not in the same division. Like, Miami doesn't have a single division rival. Not one.
Well, that Hawks-Heat rivalry is just one we've talked about for decades.
It's so sad, right? They play four times a year.
Not even Orlando-Miami is a rivalry, and they're in the same state.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about that.
It started to kind of get that way when Dwight was there. That first
little
year when Dwight was still in Orlando.
It
was
a little bit.
Because Dwight and D-Wade have a little bit of beef. I actually went to a Gatorade event that they were both at the summer, that 2010 summer after they both signed. Or after Wade signed and it was like the start of it. And it was like a really awkward situation. There were a lot of really subtle. There was just tension in the room. It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
but in general, like no, like they didn't have a rivalry. Orlando, Atlanta doesn't have a rivalry. Like there are very few. Like the Southwest has them, but that's because the Southwest has a bunch of good teams.
Right. Exactly. That's usually more. It's just good teams have rivalries with each other.
It's like, well, Dallas and San Antonio have a rivalry. Yeah, because they were both 50-plus win teams for 10 years in a row.
Right.
You're going to run into each other a few times.
Yeah, a few times. I don't like the idea of getting rid of conferences, though. I'm out on that. I think there are travel logistics that make it necessary to separate the two. And you just one big league, like, that's just messy. I feel like it's very messy. I'm good with two conferences. I actually wonder if this may lead to conference realignment in the sense that it is weird that Memphis is still in the West. It's even kind of weird that Minnesota is in the West, you know? And I just wonder, I wonder if they'll ever kind of look at that and try to make it a little more fair for at least Memphis.
Yeah, but who are you moving?
I don't know.
That's the thing. That's the problem is you get a bunch of Western teams that are far east enough to play in the Eastern Conference, but you don't have any Eastern Conference teams that are far west enough to switch.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be awful here, but let's say, like, what if the Bucks move to Seattle?
Move them to Seattle.
You know, yeah, then someone's got to go.
Yeah, then you move Memphis. I think that's the play, is you move Memphis to – let's see, what would you do then? If Milwaukee goes, you got to move somebody to the Central.
We're getting rid of divisions.
That's right. You're right. We don't have to
get rid of divisions. Hopefully. What if they? And here's another thing. What if they add an expansion team instead of moving a team? Do you just throw? Could you put Seattle just in the West and leave Memphis there, or would you throw Memphis a bone and put them in the East?
I mean, the best thing would be add Seattle, add San Jose.
I can't imagine the Warriors would sign off on that.
Yeah, and they're really powerful at this point too.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a gigantic territorial tax.
You could do Seattle,
Las Vegas. That's Kansas not going to happen, but yeah, Kansas City.
You do Seattle, Kansas City. That'd be easy.
Yeah.
And Kansas City would become the new Charlotte that everyone hates. Like
sure.
Like Ethan Sherwood-Strauss is like wondering why basketball is played there at all, why the sport isn't banned. Like it would be bad for a long time. And like unless they got a really good team off the bat, or they drafted like a Kansas person, it would be really really difficult. And I say that as somebody who was born in Kansas City and lived there 4 years and went to Missouri, so I'm not hating on you, Kansas City. I love you, but let's be honest, you know, tough town. Yeah, the conference idea, I guess, is good. I'm still pissed off that I don't like the fact that you can be 10 games over, like, you can be 5 games over 500 in the Western Conference and not make the playoffs, and some crap-ass team in the Eastern Conference makes the playoffs. Because, if nothing else, there's a part of me that's like, you know, they deserve that money. Like, that team put together a good run. They deserve the money.
Yeah, that's true. I think the problem is it's so reactionary, because there will be years where it is even. And then what's the problem, right?
Yeah.
You know, like it, now, and it's been this way for a few years.
Well, actually, I'll tell you, for me, actually, it's a personal, it goes beyond that. It's less a matter of me being outraged by something and more of the fact that I love the idea of the matchups get a lot more interesting to me. Like every year I look at, what if we did if we had no conferences and we just ranked them 1 through 16, and the matchups, I'm always like, God, this would be really fascinating. This would be so good.
I mean, you're still getting those bottom feeders in the East as the last teams in the playoffs.
Sure, but then, you know, Miami and Indiana are going to – if the playoffs – if this were to hold, if the standings were to hold, which, you know, they won't, but we assume those two teams are going to be pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Those two teams are going to have a really good chance to play those crappy Eastern teams. Like, it does work itself out. It just means that we could get things like the Clippers versus, you know –
I'm happy guaranteeing for the next like 2-3 years that we're gonna get Pacers Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, I love that. Yeah, sign me up. Like, even if the first round's crappy, sign me up for that. And it's not like the Western playoffs are gonna be any worse.
That's a really good point. That's actually a really good point, because I would miss. I do like having the same teams meeting. I like the narrative of. And I wrote about this morning of. It's a random Tuesday game in December, so it's like it means nothing, but. I love the entire storyline of Pacers Heat, because everyone, for various reasons, it's market, it's also Jordan, everyone really just honed in on Chicago and honed in on it and honed in on it, and I got sucked into it the same way I got sucked into the Knicks last year. Yeah. But in reality, you know, Indiana made the first push in 2010, 2011, and then in 2011, 2012, everyone forgets they gave Miami fits in that second.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and David West was like yelling at people to get off the court when they won that. I think they won game one, and he was like, get off the court. Like, we're not done here.
Yeah.
And like Danny Granger and LeBron James got into it. And Lance Stevenson did the choke sign when he was nobody. And everyone's like, "What are you doing, Lance Stephenson? You're gonna be out of the league in 2 years."
Yeah,
you
know? Juwan Howard got in his grill.
Yeah, Dexter Pittman tried to kill him.
Well, to be fair, Dexter Pittman just kind of loses control of his body at all times.
I will say though, I watched that play again this morning, and it made me think like they should have, like, LeBron should have kept Dex around. He should have been like, "No, let's keep Dexter," and then been like, "But he's terrible." Yeah, but he was willing to do that. Like, I want that guy.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he deserves at least that versus, like, like I actually like Terrell Harris, like, quite a bit. But, like, some of their other, like, Vardado even last year I like a lot. I keep being like, yeah, Dexter Pittman's awful, but at least he's that guy that's willing to do that for you. You know which side of the aisle he's on.
Right.
Like, he's not Andre Iguodala, you know? Right. So, anyway, yeah, now that you mention it, you're right on the conferences.
Because I do think, like, there was a cool stretch from, like, 2004 to, let's say, 2009, in which, maybe 2008, in which the Pistons were, like, this regarded kings of the East, right? Like, they won the championship, they got back to the finals, then, like, Miami, like, Wade started to emerge, they had Shaq, that was, like, a good matchup, and then you had LeBron break through against them in 2007 and have that insane run before they got destroyed in the finals, and then you had the Celtics measuring up against them. Like, you do get those stretches where it's like, this is the team you have to figure out how to beat if you want to be a title contender. And I think that definitely goes away if you get rid of conferences.
Yeah, and it becomes a lot more random. You're gonna have a lot more.
Yeah. And you know me, I'm very, very much a snob when it comes to basketball. Like, I like my elitism. I like the fact that we're gonna get Miami, Indiana for the next 3 years. Like, I like that. I'm good with that. Even if the initial product in the playoffs suffers, I want the elite playing for the title.
Yeah, I mean, because it's partially like you don't want Golden State knocking out Indiana. Like, yeah, it's one thing Golden State knock out Denver, but
yeah, that would be fun, but I think it would be kind of fleeting.
There is, and it's true, and we see it in the ratings, and we see it with our traffic as well, that people really do. It's not, you know, I'm always surprised because I'm like, but this matchup was so much more interesting than the later matchup. The further you go, people just care. When the stakes are higher,
yeah,
people care about it more. And so when you have these really tough teams, it kind of matches up. So, I mean, that's good. I do think everyone can agree that, I mean, I have actually an alternative to the division plan, which is just we contract the Atlantic Division now.
Just get rid of them.
And then we don't have a problem.
You get rid of the Atlantic Division, you add a Seattle franchise, we're good, right?
Like, I'm not even talking about, like, long term. Just this year, just right now. Because imagine if we just said, you know what, we're shutting down the Atlantic. It's not really in a good place. It's like a business that we're gonna reopen under new management, but right now we just don't need to be open. We're bleeding money too much.
We've got to renovate. We've got to circle the wagons and get our business model back on track. Yeah.
And wait. And the best part, you have for the remainder of the year, you have an expansion draft with all the players in the Atlantic. And we get to see where Jordan Crawford goes.
Ooh. You protect your top five players, right?
Right.
Except there's...
It's only for the rest of the year. You're not playing. Next year, you get him back.
Man. Jordan Crawford creating a big four on the Heat would be... That would be fun.
And then the Clippers wind up somehow with the number one pick and take Carmelo.
That would be great.
And then there's a tension of New York being like, and him saying, "Oh, I really like playing in Los Angeles. This has been so much fun."
I could see the Pelicans going after J.R. Smith just to put him next to Eric Gordon and Tyreke Evans, because why the hell not?
Why not? Let's take another ball dominant guard.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies are there, and they've got like, you know, Crawford and I'm trying to think who else can shoot in that conference.
Bargnani?
Whoever. Do what?
Bargnani,
yeah. Joe Johnson, they got all these options, and they wind up taking Avery Bradley.
Yep.
As I just, like, throw things constantly. They take Kelly Olynyk. Another world, another time. It would be intense. You know, it was also intense.
Oh, that Kid Frank rivalry. that Kid Frank beef.
It's sad, man. Like, Lawrence took him to the finals.
Lawrence took him to the finals. I don't know. It's a weird reading David Aldridge at NBA.com. We got the story up on CBSSports.com from David Aldridge. The story that came across to me was there is this relationship between the lead assistant or whatever assistant is assigned, you know, offense or defense when you have that situation, and the head coach, where the head coach is the leader, they will make the final decisions. But throughout a game, I mean, you and I see it all the time. There are assistant coaches calling out defensive assignments, scouting report items that they want happening. I mean, you wait for the offense to call the play, and then you say, you basically shout out what the play is. Everyone's so well scouted in this league that you have an assistant coach saying, this, you know, they're going to the side, or they're pick and roll, or, you know, we need to ice this, we need to hedge that, you know, you get all kinds of calls out from the sidelines. And from what I read, it seems like Jason Kidd wasn't all that comfortable with it, even though it seemed like something this would have, he would have come across in his 20 years in the league, or 19 or whatever it was. And
I'm
so
sure as a player, he had no problem telling the other players what to do or telling the coach what they needed to do.
Especially when you're a point guard. Especially when you're an all-time point guard. Like, that's what you do. And so I get the – what I wonder is how many – were there conversations leading up to the supposed blow-up?
Was he like, stop,
was
stop,
like, look,
stop.
You need to pull back. Let me do this. And he just kept going. And then it was, I'm the coach of this MFing team. Or I'm sorry. All we know is that it was a 13-letter expletive. I'm just guessing.
Well, clearly it was reportering.
Right.
I don't know how many letters that is, but...
Right. Is that what led to it? Or was it just insecurity, maybe, that was, hey, I'm the coach of this team, and Lawrence Frank's like, sorry, and then he's like, you're doing reports now.
Yeah.
I don't really... I mean, I wonder what the lead-up to the blow-up was.
You know what's fascinating is that everyone kind of got reaction to the dynamic, and it was kind of, you know, most coaches deferred or just didn't comment on it because it's none of their business.
Right.
But there were a few that the longer tenured coaches were kind of had Frank's back and were like, well, you want a healthy amount of dissent, and it seems like a tough situation all around. Like, definitely did not back Kidd. The former player coaches backed Kidd 100%.
Yep.
Like, Mark Jackson was like, you got to go in there and claim your stake and praise these, you know, his whole thing. And I thought that was really interesting because I'm just like, you don't know what the dynamic is. And if you're Frank, you've also got to be like, you don't know what you're doing. You know you don't know what you're doing.
Right.
Why are you yelling at me?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. It is a weird situation. I mean, as many jokes as we made about it, it just sounds like there wasn't leadership, right? Or there was too much leadership. There wasn't the correct amount of leadership.
Yeah.
And I don't even think that has to do with, oh, this is why they're bad. It's just you throw a guy into a situation and then you give him a coach who's making an assistant coach who's making $1 million a year. It just seems like a lot of mixed signals around. And the next jump is, well, yeah, that's Billy King, that's Mikhail Prokhorov. Like, that's the jump, but it's still weird that it happened. Even if it's a ridiculous front office and a ridiculous ownership that, you know, we crack jokes about, it's still, that's such an unusual thing.
This Nets season in general, I loved Brook Lopez's reaction because they asked him the other day, how does this compare to that season when they basically, like, they won no games ever. Like, they obviously, like, the worst start in franchise history. It was a complete disaster. And he was like, this one's a lot more bizarre. It was really weird because he wasn't like, I would be like Gerald Wallace, obviously, freaking out after every game, yelling, screaming, going, what is going on?
Yeah.
And Brook Lopez was just like, it's just weird, man. This is just weird. I don't really know, understand what's going on. Like, this is just strange. There's no reason we should be this bad. Like, you can tell. Like, you can tell Brook Lopez, while everyone else is, like, really down on themselves and struggling, that... And that is, I think, the difference between the Nets and the Knicks is the Knicks seem very much confident of, whatever, we'll be fine. If not, we get paid. And the Nets seem very much like, what the hell just happened to us?
Yeah.
Did you get Darren and Kidd back tonight, though? Or not Kidd, but Darren and Pierce.
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully Darren's ankle holds up. Like, it would be nice, you know, it's fun to make jokes about the team, but it would be nice to see them healthy and kind of get their stuff together. I would much rather see them be interesting in terms of like execution and playing well than be the circus all year round. I don't know what that would do for our numbers, but I just don't want to keep watching Nets games and thinking like it's just a comedy of errors, right?
Yeah, and there's a point where this will no longer be interesting.
Yeah, and I think we're kind of nearing that point. Like after there's a settlement between the Nets and Frank, it's just going to be a certain point where it's just sad.
Like there's a point where it becomes a downfall, and then it becomes, you know, Garnett's going to rest the rest of the year and evaluate whether or not he wants to retire, and Pierce will do the same, and you know, Kidd will get fired, and that'll be a disaster, and it'll just be kind of Brook Lopez out there doing things, and that nobody wants that.
Yeah.
The Nets, I will say it's interesting because the bloggers are very honest with their assessment, and the difference is that there's an expectation for everyone to kind of maintain perspective, both with New York and the Nets, and say like, well, they're injured and it's early in the season and everything can change. But all the sets of bloggers I've read have been very much of the, you know, look, we don't know how to get around it. They've been bad.
Yeah.
They haven't just been injured. They've just been bad.
Yeah.
And there's no way really way to get around that. And you can tell the concern there. It's not that they can't turn it around. It's just that I think that the Knicks really surprised me that they had that Boston letdown. I was like, okay, they turned it around. And even if they lost to Boston, if it had been like, okay, they lost by 8. Well, okay, but they played a little bit better.
Yeah, there's a difference between losing a close game after you seemingly have turned things around and then losing by 40 and being down by like 50.
Getting eaten by the sea.
Right. Yeah.
A little bit of a differential there. So, a lot of stuff to watch. Some interesting games last night. It was a short slate, and I looked at it and was kind of like, ugh, like this is not very interesting. Some interesting stuff happened. It was kind of compelling.
Yeah, Warriors Bobcats was the game of the night, right?
Kemba Monium. I love Kemba Walker, and I hated him coming out of college. He was the ultimate college player.
And he was so bad his rookie year.
So bad!
And he just figured it out.
It was really weird, because he honestly, it's like he came into a second year and was like, oh, I can dribble. That's right. I am really good at dribbling. Because, man, he put Harrison Barnes on that yo-yo last night. Did you see that? You probably didn't. You and I don't rip on David Lee like everyone else does. We're kind of like, he is a really good offensive player, and there's lots of guys that make lots of defensive mistakes.
Right.
Like, yeah, he's bad, but there's lots of guys in that position. They started to make a little bit of a run, and David Lee comes up to the free throw line and starts clapping. He starts clapping. Let's go. All right. And you can hear him, and he's barking out orders, right?
Yeah.
And he turns to his left to say something, and as he's saying that, Kemba Walker goes right around Stephen Curry to where
that.
David Lee would have been and scored.
I saw that. That was I wouldn't say that's the way you fire up your team.
It was such a value ever, though. You could tell David was like, all right, guys, let's – oh, wait, where'd you go? Gerald Henderson was amazing.
Yeah, he was really good.
He's got that – you know what's weird? He's got I wonder if he learned that one from MJ. Of all the guys in the Bobcats, I very rarely see anything that MJ taught him. He's the only guy that I see that he's got such great lift that he does the baseline fadeaway.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that you notice jumping on his jumpers.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about his footwork in those situations, or just when he has the ball in general. But yeah, he does really rise and fire on those jumpers.
And he extends it too. Like he jumps and he's got that Jordan, not Jordan ability, but it looks like Jordan where it's the jump and then fade and he's just in the air forever.
Yeah.
That's why I love his dunks, because he's just in the air for, it feels like he can serve himself coffee.
Yeah.
He gets miles while he's up there. Curry had 42, but took a ton of shots. Interesting debate last night, not debate, just a discussion really on Twitter. Ethan and I and a few others were talking about, like, what's a, you know, did Curry force bad shots? Because somebody was like, well, you know, the three-pointer's not falling. He shouldn't just be jacking him up. He should be trying to, you know, the idea was to get back to basics, like get to the rim, get fouled, et cetera. And Ethan and I were kind of the same opinion, which is, that's not the most efficient shot for Curry.
No, yeah. I think with a lot of players, I agree with that. Not Curry. I just think Curry is just, I mean, I think he's the best three-point shooter of all time. People will say, oh, that's way too early to say that. And yeah, maybe it is. But from what I've what I've seen from him so far, like, the volume and the accuracy, like, I feel comfortable saying it. And if I end up being wrong, I end up being wrong. But right now, like, I'm not trying to be sensational or anything. Like, he takes them in so many different ways with so much accuracy that I'm good saying it. Like,
the all-time scoring leaders, primarily Bird, if Bird had played in the modern era, it would be a lot different. He probably would have put up a number that was so absurd it could never be touched. It'd be like Stockton's assists.
And people would be like, oh, he played when the three-point line was there. It's like, it's not the same. It wasn't a weapon then. It just it wasn't weaponized at all.
People felt really weird about it. It was uncomfortable. It was made them feel awkward, like a real sex episode. It wasn't accepted.
God, that show's awful. It's never satisfying. We probably can't talk about that, right?
But no, we can't. We're moving on.
let me just say that it's just nothing is more disappointing for someone looking for something out of that show.
Okay. So
we're all thinking it. You shouldn't have brought it up.
But Curry, most of the ball dominant scorers were not 3-point shooters. Most of the 3-point leaders historically have been spot up guys like Ray Allen. Curry is the rare guy, and like I looked at his numbers, he genuinely does. He shoots better on pull ups than he does in spot up situations.
Yeah, I mean he's just in,
which makes no sense.
Right. He even like obviously him. Ray Allen, those are guys I will just say, keep shooting. Like, keep taking three-point shots. I believe that you're going to break through that, even in a game. Like, Curry could be 0 for 13 from 3 in a game. And if he pulled up on a fast break from 3, I would say, yep, that's the shot you want.
Now, here's an interesting question, though. If his – because there are two distinct shots that he takes. It's much like Kobe, right? There are shots that he takes in the flow of the offense that you love, and there are shots that he takes that are crazy-ass Kobe shots, right?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with Curry, where he takes spot-up, well-positioned rhythm threes, and he takes some that are crazy-ass, leaning sideways, step-back, what-the-hell, fade-away, Splash Brother threes.
Yeah.
And the question is, if those aren't falling out for you on a certain night, not that you should try and get back to basics and get to the rim, but should he get back to basics and try and get more spot-up opportunities, or at least get a little bit more rhythm going into his shot rather than just launching?
See, I don't know that you can just go get spot-up opportunities. I mean, maybe you can with that team because they do move the ball and they do seem to get so many of them. But I think hoping that you're going to like pull back and hoping you're going to get spot-up shots, I don't agree with.
Well, it's also without Iguodala. It's like, well, okay, if he's not handling the ball, who is?
Yeah, exactly. And so I don't think that's a good idea. Maybe leaning and stuff. Here's the weird thing about the psychology of it all. Is if he hits one of those crazy ass like leaning three pointers off the dribble, that might do it. You know, that might turn the tides. Like, confidence in a shooter is such a fickle thing, to where you could take a horrible shot, hit it, and think, all right, now I'm good. And if you get into that confident mindset, then that might be all you need.
I agree to a certain extent. Here's the issue I have. It's that he gets into – it's that when he misses one – like, if you take one to try and get yourself going, yeah. But there's got to be a point, right, where isn't there a point where, okay, I've tried it 3 times and it hasn't struck?
I don't think – I honestly –
Granted, look, he was 5 of 12 for 42% shooting, three-point shooting in the second half. So it's like he was hitting.
Yeah. I think there are just certain shooters that are above those principles. And I think he's one of them. And – I mean, if he's not passing to an open Klay Thompson to take that shot, then yeah, that's a bad shot. Yeah. But I like his chances, and maybe I'm just a Curry homer at this point in terms of his 3-point ability, because I do get pretty irrational about it. Like I it's hard for me to think like he's taking a bad shot when he takes a three, but I just unless he's just not passing to open guys and taking those, I'm good with it.
Interesting. I did pick up something interesting on Synergy last night, because everyone's kind of looking at where, you know, where's he struggling, and Ethan found that he's struggling from the corner. He's shooting 30% from the corner, and Ethan's like, probably going to get better from there.
Yeah, that's weird.
The other number that stands out to me, he's way down in transition pull-ups. His Pujits are down.
Yeah.
Which I want to say, like this, and it's legitimately an interesting question to me, because my initial reaction is, well, yeah, because that's a terrible shot. Like, nobody should be able to hit that. But then you go, but he hit it all of last year.
He's hit it for a couple of years, yeah.
So you have, like, and last year I think was really the point where it became ridiculous, right? Where it became justifiable in any situation. There are times when Pujits are acceptable. There's a lot of times when they're not. With Curry, it became it's always acceptable.
Right.
So the question is, you've got 1 month versus an entire year, but you've got what is traditionally a bad shot versus what is not a bad shot for Stephen Curry. And that creates like a really interesting dynamic, because it's like, well, what if last year it was just a year and he just hit all of those? And he's still the best three-point shooter of all time, but not necessarily the best three-point shooter of all time to where any shot he takes is acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, I just...
No, and that's what I'm saying, though. You can easily make the argument that he should keep shooting them.
Yeah, for sure.
It's fascinating. I just think it's a really interesting
And question. I don't know that the argument that he shouldn't shoot them is wrong.
Right.
You know, he is one of those historically special players in that specific skill set that kind of just makes you rethink all of your principles. I mean, that's kind of what I wrote, I think, in the playoffs last year. It was basically all of these things we think about shooting don't apply to him because he's just that special. And you know, they're just those guys. There are some guys with the way they play defense. Like, some of the stuff Tony Allen does is crazy. Like, his defensive tactics are crazy, and you would never teach them. But they work for Tony Allen because he's not a historical all-time defender, but he's a really damn good defender. Like, he's elite. And I think there's some guys where it's just – we kind of have – like, you just end up looking the other way with these unwritten rules, right?
Yeah, he – I will say, if any of you get a chance to go back and watch this game – watch the Bobcats defense of Stephen Curry in the second half, because while he shot a better than – like, his bad game was still better than most, I loved their defense of him. They basically didn't try and close on the screens. They just waited until – they flashed at him when he came up the court to stop the pull-up. And when he went – and then the secondary guy backed off until he went under the screen, behind the screen. And as soon as he did, they closed out.
Yeah.
It was the best Stephen Curry defense I've seen out of anybody outside of like San Antonio just busting his ass.
Right.
So it was some really good work. I love the defensive system. There's so much about this Bobcats team I just love. They're gonna fall apart, and I know that. But God, this team has been so much fun to watch this month.
Hey, Steve Clifford might make it through 1 year.
We can only hope. Nuggets Wizards was a disaster in terms of nobody could hit a shot. I still felt I was entertained. I thought it was a really back and forth game.
Yeah, this is one I have not watched yet.
John Wall,
as I told you before we recorded, I saw 150 points. I thought, yeah, I can wait on this one.
Pass. Wilson Chandler's awful good. John Wall was awful good until the last play when he turned it. Actually, the last like four, he had a bad clutch. He had a bad clutch time. Happens, but. He lost the ball on the final possession, and there's a debate about whether it was stripped or not, or he just lost it, but lost the ball.
Trevor Ariza took 19 shots. That's not good for anybody.
Yeah, they started to believe in Ariza, and I'm kind of like,
I mean, I guess it's good to try to instill confidence in a guy, but maybe too far.
Clippers beat Philly because that makes sense.
Yeah. Blake Griffin.
Orlando made the game against Memphis because Memphis is just beat to hell.
Blake Griffin was phenomenal against Philly, and it's Philly, he was so good.
And nobody will notice.
Yeah.
Not a damn person will notice. Check out DeAndre Jordan hit the boards.
Yeah, he had 19. Had the Los Angeles ripped off his jersey. That was fun.
Yep. That was fun. Portland beat Utah in a very Portland-Utah game. It was kind of very much both teams. It's like, and Utah made a run, and then Batum and Lillard hit back-to-back threes, and we're like, nope, we're done. So long. Thanks for coming. I don't understand how this league works sometimes, because you and I have talked about how the missing player, when they're hurt, rallies the team.
Yeah.
And the fired coach dynamic, the first game after a coach gets fired, the team always wins.
Yeah.
How in the hell did Sacramento beat the crap out of Dallas? How did this happen? How does this happen?
Well, I have a couple thoughts here. One, I think getting rid of players, I kind of feel like it gives you a sense of, well, anything goes tonight because we don't have a full roster. And there are times where that's a defeating thing, and there are times where it's, you get a young team like Sacramento that they just like to go out there and play basketball. Like, I don't know if they actually like to run anything. They just like to go play basketball. And they caught a Dallas team that where every item you used to try to talk me out of them before the season started was absolutely on display in that game. I mean, every concern you had was like, hey, watch that game. That's exactly what you're talking about. Because they were just so bad defensively. They were so bad in transition defense. They got killed on the boards. Like, they just,
but.
Yeah?
Monte shot 50% from the field.
Yeah.
5 assists, 3 turnovers.
Yeah, he was solid.
Like, he's never the problem.
Sacramento just ran them.
Samuel Dallenberg is not the center that you were looking for. That's Dallas fans were commenting on that last night. It's a huge problem for them.
It's rare where I would think Dwan Blair starting over you is a good decision, but I'm kind of okay with it.
Yeah, they really need a rim protector.
Yeah. DeMarcus Cousins turned the ball over a lot, but he was a monster. I mean, that's the kind of game you want to see out of him. Isaiah Thomas was phenomenal, obviously. He had 24 and 12. And Derek Williams, career high. When he gets to just be an athlete and he doesn't have to think through stuff, and I'm not – this will come off as meaner than I mean it, but, like, when he can just play, he's pretty fun. He still took some bad shots and it just happened to hit him. But for the most part, like, he just got to go out there and play basketball, and it was – it's fun to see him feeling confident again.
I love that Isaiah Thomas basically took the opportunity and ran with it, and just he's fearless and he just attacks and everyone loves him. It's always just weird to me. I want to know what goes on in practice with these coaches. This is what 3 coaches now that have been like, well, yeah, we're going to use Isaiah, but you know, like, I want to know what it is in practice that makes these guys just deny him opportunities to the point where basically management has to be like, we're not giving you an option.
It's the height. It really
just
is.
The size?
It's the size because, all right, he's actually passed well this year. I never thought he was much of a passing point guard, but he's passed really well this year. And also, like, it doesn't lead to a whole lot, but they don't have a ton of harnessed talent. But with him, there is a concern with point guards that are that short that they don't see the floor. Like, yeah, it's not that they don't have point guard vision. It's that they physically can't see the floor because they're so short.
Right.
And there is a legit. I mean, you see it with J.J. Barea. There are passes he just doesn't see because the guys he's going against are too big.
Right. And it's like a short quarterback.
Exactly, yeah. And that is a legitimate concern, and I think you've seen that throughout Isaiah Thomas' career. Now, that doesn't matter when it comes to scoring. He can flat-out score the ball. But finding those angles that you don't typically see because of size, if he can figure out how to do that consistently – and show that consistently, I think you'll see coaches won't be able to deny the talent he has, right? And won't be able to deny him opportunities.
I think a lot of it is that Isaiah Thomas is a difference maker. He's not a guy that can run your offense.
Right.
But the differential is that I think maybe D'Alessandro and Malone together realized, we don't need to worry about that right now.
Exactly.
Like, let's just play. Like
exactly.
You said, like, let's just have guys that can make a difference.
Build their confidence up. Build up their self-worth on a court, and then you mold it. Like, you,
yeah.
It's hard to mold guys that don't. Right? You saw that with Minnesota and Derek Williams. They kind of destroyed his confidence, and then they would throw him out there and ask him to do stuff in inconsistent minutes, and he couldn't do anything because he knew if he made a mistake, he was coming out. And you if you get a group of guys who – don't have that fear. And granted, they're not trying to win games right now, so it doesn't matter. Like, everything they do positively is just icing on the cake. But you build up the confidence, a lot easier to mold that. Now, you can't let it go too far to where they have they go from confidence to just flat out ego.
Right.
You know, to where they're above the molding. But I think the Kings are kind of finding that sweet spot right now.
I said last night, in the romantic comedy that is the Kings, this is the moment where the turbulent, mercurial DeMarcus Cousins begrudgingly falls in love with Mike Malone.
Oh man, but that means, oh crap, what's going to happen? They're going to trade for, oh, maybe the Rudy Gay trade comes in and Mike Malone starts getting eyes for Rudy.
Yep.
And then things and then will they fall have
the
apart.
The emotional breakup in the rain.
Yeah, emotional breakup in the rain. And then later on, the emotional makeup in the rain.
Mike Malone runs into some sort of crowded space and plays guitar and sings a song.
Oh, will it be like that Justin Timberlake movie? Is like DeMarcus Cousins is he gonna like organize a flash mob?
Flash mob, yes. Yeah,
to really get to make up with Mike Malone. Oh, I'm so excited for the end of the season already.
I will be honest with you. I think it's pretty evident that I know most of the players in the NBA, right? That's I think it's hard to argue that I don't.
I'd be shocked if there was a name you didn't know.
Like you may think that my assessments of them are completely wrong. Fair point to you, but I at least am aware of their existence. Right. I don't know how to pronounce Hamadi Ndaye's name at all. Just don't know. I don't think I've ever watched. If he's checked in, it's just I have never noticed it.
Hamadi Ndaye.
Ndaye last night was minus 21 in 8 minutes and 50 seconds.
That seems hard to do.
Jimmer was minus 18 in 9 minutes and 36 seconds, which is really disappointing because I had actually talked myself into a Jimmer night.
Yeah, that's all politics, though.
Politics?
That's all I'm going to cite now when Jimmer gets screwed over by, I don't know, his own play or whatever. It's just politics.
But also, this would be the most Sacramento thing ever that they have this 15-point win over the Mavericks at home. The crowd gives Rudy Gay a standing ovation coming down through the crowd, and then Gay completely destroys their chemistry and any hope they have. Like, wouldn't that be the most Sacramento thing ever?
Oh, like, that's me.
I'm just trying to – it just seems like it would fit the narrative. Look, I'm going to say this again. The Rudy Gay thing got really contentious last year because everyone wanted to say that Memphis made a bad trade. And you could look at this year and say, don't they need Rudy Gay right now? And the answer is no, they still need a guy that can shoot. He shoots 38% from the field. He wouldn't make things better. They need Marc Gasol back, and they need somebody who can shoot who's not Mike Miller. That's what they need. It was the best thing for Memphis. It was time to go. It was creating a conflict. Rudy was taking possessions that needed to go down to Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, and Mike Conley. That's just the reality of it. The Raptors needed to make a move. It could have worked for them. It didn't. Brian needed to try and save his job. It didn't. And now he's on his way. I still want Rudy Gay to be successful. If he will commit himself to what we talked about yesterday and be in the Matrix kind of guy and let Cousins be the dude and let Isaiah Thomas do his thing, and if Rudy embraces the role of being the veteran guy that helps them win, he will be beloved in Sacramento. They will love him. He will be a god there.
Yeah.
But he's got to get past the biggest thing is Rudy, I think, is another player that has to get past. And we all have this in our lives. Do you think that you are things that you are not? There's daring to be bold. There's dreaming to be a champion. There's wanting to spread your wings and fly. And then there's understanding who you are. And those are two different things.
Yeah. It's like the show Real Sex has no idea what it is.
We're back here again. We're back on the masturbation.
No, it's not masturbation. Wow, why did you go there? Let's just go to games.
All
right. Wow, I was talking about art.
Whoops! All right, tonight.
Speaking of overweight German people in latex, Knicks Cavs.
Can't breathe. Can't breathe. Okay. Knicks Cavs.
That's definitely my best segue ever.
Now I'm just gonna imagine Raymond Felton.
Oh no. Raymond Felton and Anthony Bennett.
The Cavaliers are favored by 2.5 versus New York at home tonight.
Sure. I kind of think the Knicks screw with us and end up winning this one.
Okay.
I don't know why.
I'm back on. They won one, so I chose them, and then they completely screwed me over with the Boston thing, so I am fading the Knicks until they win again.
Yeah.
By the way, an update. We talked about it yesterday. I figured it out this morning. You are over 500. You actually got over there last week. You are 60, 58, and 3 for the season.
Holy crap. I might retire.
Yeah. I am 157, 133, and 8. Went 500 last night. I went 2-2-2 last night. Two splits.
Oh, yeah, there were two splits. Huh? Memphis was a split?
Memphis and Denver.
Oh, Denver. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, couldn't win by more than one point. Just needed 1 point, one free throw. We'll come back to Indiana.
Yeah,
and Miami, San Antonio on the road in Toronto, favored by 7.5.
Yeah, I like it.
You like San Antonio?
Yeah, it's hard to know what this Toronto team's going to do, moving forward. So, unless it's a ridiculous line, I would kind of just stay away from trusting Toronto to cover.
If they win this game, it's gonna piss me off so bad.
It really is.
Just not gonna understand it. Like, what are you? Especially if they trade Lowry before the game and then they win again, Jury's just gonna throw the papers in the air at his desk. Like, calls Brett Brown. What do we have to do? And Brett Brown's gonna be like, or not Brett Brown, but Sam Hinkie's gonna be like, well, I started poisoning my guys. I don't know what to tell you. It's no knee injury for Michael Carter Williams. Oklahoma City is in Atlanta. This line's really tricky. It was 4.5. It's up to 5. Thunder favored by 5.
It feels like Atlanta's kind of getting it together, which means I think the Thunder cover.
That's the most Hawks statement ever. They really seem like they're coming together, so they will lose.
Yeah.
This one's also interesting. Boston is on the road in Barclays. Vegas either hasn't learned its lesson, this is all about Vegas zone and where the money is, or something weird. The Brooklyn Nets are favored by 2.
Well, Darren's back and Pierce is back, right?
Sure.
Well, I'm just saying, like, that's got to be the thinking with this.
Yeah, that's
line,
like
right?
That's like, yeah, that's like 1.25 players.
Oh. Oh, what's sad is neither of them are the whole player.
Exactly. It's like 0.75 and 0.5.
I'm going to go with the Nets. I have no idea why. It's 2?
We're in the exact same place that we were last year when the Celtics went on that win streak and pissed me off, and so I started picking them every game, and they kept losing.
Yeah.
I'm back there. I'm taking the Boston Celtics every game until they lose like 20 in a row.
Look at you trying to jinx them.
Nope. Just trusting them, Zach. I believe. Please don't tell John from Red's Army. Please don't tell John. The Pistons are favored by 1 against your Minnesota Timberwolves in Detroit tonight. Really quietly going to be a fascinating game, I think.
It's going to be a great game. I like the
way Josh Smith is either going to be is going to have his worst game of the season, and that's going to be impressive, or he's going to destroy this team just despite you.
Yeah. I love is back. This is two really good rebounding front lines. I'm going to go with the Wolves because they do kind of need to win this game.
I'm taking Detroit. I like Drummond versus Pekovic. I like Monroe versus Love being kind of a wash, not points-wise, but just overall production. I actually think that Jennings-Rubio is a really fascinating matchup. I mostly think it just comes down to – I think Detroit has a stronger identity on both sides of the ball than Minnesota does. Minnesota knows what's doing on offense, but not as much on defense. So
that's fair.
I think it's I've got it close. I've got it 97-91 after free throws. It's mostly at home too.
Yeah.
And a game that I will not be watching under any circumstances, and anyone that is listening to this, please do not do this to yourself. Love yourself more. The Milwaukee Bucks are on the road in Chicago. The Bulls are 7.5-point favorites.
Yuck. I'll go.
Don't ask this question. You know who you're taking.
I just feel like the Bulls are disgusting. Yeah, I'll go with the Bulls, but I actually don't like this game. Not just
them beating Detroit and losing to Milwaukee would be pretty emblematic of where they're at.
Yeah. By the way,
able to...
Ricky Rubio shoots 60% in games against Brandon Jennings. It's a total of 15 shots. In 2 games.
He's hot.
Just a little tidbit.
Has Rubio disappointed this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he hasn't. We saw.
I applaud you for your fair assessment, because you can make an argument that he hasn't, and I applaud you for that, for being honest with your assessment.
No, I think that's fair, because I think that, I think after his knee got healthy last year, he made such great strides in how he attacked defense, and I think with these weapons, like, he has Love back, he has Kevin Martin now, he still has Peck. Like, I think with these weapons, he has become. This is not meant as a pun. He's become too passive in the way he attacks the defense. And it's not just with passing. I just think it's with his, or not because of the passing. I just think it's his overall game. I don't think he's very aggressive in intelligent ways, and that's disappointing for sure.
And the last game before we get to the game of the night, the Phoenix Suns are in Los Angeles to face the Lakers. Kobe's second game back. The Lakers are favored by 3.
Kobe's definitely playing, right? As far as we know.
Yeah, he's playing. Yeah, as far as we know, he's playing.
I'll take... Ooh, actually, I'm going to go with the Suns, and I don't know why.
Me too. This is... The Suns are going to keep winning until somebody notices them. I called them this in the power rankings. This team, these are a bunch of damn ninjas.
Yeah.
Like, no one is noticing that this team is really not... It's hard to say that they're not good, because they're really good in the Western Conference, but they're a good team. They are a good period team.
Yes.
And
it's why I took them out of, I mean, not just because of the record, but watching them play, like, I couldn't justify having them as a joke in power tankings. Like, I just couldn't. Like, they're actually good.
Like, they create high quality looks, and if you're able to create high quality looks, you will get them all day versus the Lakers.
Yeah.
It really comes down to, they have no one to guard Pau Gasol, but Pau Gasol is Pau Gasol now.
Oh.
And, you know, I don't necessarily love any of the matchups to try and guard Kobe, but it's the second game back from the Achilles. So now you're looking at, can Eric Bledsoe and Goran Dragic check Steve Blake? That's a question we're asking right now.
Like, yeah.
Can one of the Morris twins do an okay job on Xavier Henry?
Yeah.
And also, this sounds weird, Keith might destroy Powell.
He should. I actually think that's a tough. I mean, just
with that's a tough matchup for
the
Powell.
The shape that Powell's body is in at this point, that's a lot of movement with a guy that's very strong.
Now, Powell could go out and have a 30-point game. Wouldn't shock me, but
sure, yeah, sure, for sure.
But yeah, I'm taking the Suns. All right, man. Game one, their first meeting since Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. The Miami Heat are in Indianapolis tonight versus what you would hope to be a packed crowd. Come on, Indiana. One time.
Do we have to worry about their attendance anymore? It's been good this year, right?
I haven't looked. I don't trust the numbers. I trust what I see. I haven't seen it. The Pacers are favored by 3 points versus the Miami Heat.
Yeah. They have the I don't know how accurate these are, but the NBA attendance report on ESPN has the Pacers at 18th at 90.5%. That's solid. It's still not
for the best team in the league. What are you waiting for to buy in? The mood to be right?
Let's look at what home games have they had.
Like, you can buy into the Colts and their inevitable first-round loss, or you can go see the Pacers.
All right, to be fair, these are their home games this year. Orlando, Cleveland, Chicago when Derrick Rose was there, so that should have been good. Toronto, Memphis, Milwaukee, Philly, Minnesota, Washington. That's not exactly a murderer's row of, oh, we got to see these guys tonight.
But the point is, you go to see your guys. You go to see you have the best team in the NBA. Go see your guys. Doesn't matter who they're playing. Staples sells out on a Sunday if they're playing the Wizards.
That's different, though. No one's going to a Pacers game to be seen.
Or how about the Bulls? The Bulls sell out on a Sunday against the Wizards.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little different.
I mean, population, yeah, but...
Population and... There's more of a tradition of going to Bulls games than there is Pacers games. I'm not trying to make excuses necessarily. I'm just saying, like, the slate hasn't been that good. I get it. Like, you go see your team, they're that good. And they're all just likable guys, even. Well, likable guys and Lance Stephenson. But I don't know. It still seems a little weird. If it's not sold out and packed and crazy tonight, then I've given up all of this argument.
So you like?
Well, all right. Here's my thought process here. The Heat have gone on a rebounding road trip. By that, I mean they face the Bulls in Chicago. They face Minnesota in Minnesota, although no love. They face Detroit in Detroit. These are three teams with a lot of firepower on the boards, right?
Yeah.
Now Indiana is another one of those teams. Like, all four of these games on this road trip, and this is the end of a four-game road trip. That's a lot of banging around. And there was talk that the Heat wanted to adjust some defensive things to help them stop getting killed on the boards, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems like they've kind of done that after that Chicago game. And that would lead me to believe that they're very prepared for this game. There is more of a psychological edge for Indiana to come out and win this game, especially since they're at home. They want to establish themselves. I don't think it's as important to Miami. I think it's important, but not as important as it is to Indiana. So even though I love the way love the way Miami has kind of reset themselves against rebounding teams, I think I'm going to go Indiana because it's going to start the narrative of this is the team in the East. The Heat may not be the big dogs anymore. And that's a narrative that's going to really annoy me because I just think it's unnecessary. So I will always pick annoyance over what should happen.
I honestly do believe, and that's why I'm hoping against hope, knock on wood, nobody gets injured. I want to see these two full strength.
Absolutely.
I want to see it. I want to settle it because I legitimately believe this is a coin flip. I think the Pacers are that good. I think LeBron. If I have to pick, I'm going with LeBron because he is not human. There is nothing like him on this planet. They have put together a team in Indiana that is so versatile, has so many weapons, plays so well together, is so well coached, and has such a good, strong team construct. I really honestly believe this is a coin flip between these two teams. I really think they can beat them. I don't know if they will in May. I think they can beat them. I never really thought that they would lose that series last year, but the more I look back on it, I'm like, I don't know. Indiana really did have a chance to steal game one. If they'd taken games one and two, it was over. Now they win game one and it's chaos theory, everything changed.
Right, yeah, yeah. I don't think you can say, if they win game one, they win game two for sure.
Right, exactly. But they were there.
For sure.
They are so good, and I've said this time and time again. I started spouting this last year. The whole idea the Chicago fans have that they hate the Heat the most is crap. That team doesn't – Joakim Noah may, but I don't think the rest of the team does. They just play hard the same way every single night. And, yeah, Chicago gets up for that game. It's true. There is a personal venom between Indiana and Miami. Like, yes. David West, Roy Hibbert, Paul George, George Hill, Lance Stephenson, down the line, these guys hate everything about Miami. It is personal to them. I don't think it's personal in terms of I don't like this guy as a human being. I think it's very much we embody this, like, we play in Indiana, no one pays attention to us, we're not doing commercials, and you think everything is handed to you. Like, we're gonna hit you in the mouth. I'm taking Indiana tonight because of what we saw last year, which is both the Heat, both the Knicks and Pacers got games on Miami early.
Yeah.
And then later in the year, when it was time, Miami was basically like, just so you know, no. Just so you're aware, there was a big lead up for one of those games late in the year versus Indiana, and the Heat just destroyed them.
Yeah, there is part of me that wonders, because the more established team, I always just think that it's a psychological kind of mind screw to not take the game as seriously as the opponent in the regular season of, like, we're not concerned with this.
Yeah.
You know, this is bigger to you than it is to us because we are above this.
Yeah, you can win. That's fine.
Yeah. But I also, for some reason, I've got this feeling that LeBron might not be that way tonight. he might actually want to just go out and destroy this Pacers team. And not saying he will if he wants to, but Norm, it's making me lose, you know, kind of deny that usual feeling I have of the established team will just be like the big brother, like pushing the little brother away of like, no, you're bothering me. Don't, you know, I don't care what you want to do right now.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I feel like LeBron is possibly going to be in this, no, we're still the guys. Like, even early in the season, we're still the ones you've got to beat. I'm very conflicted on this game. I'm taking the Pacers, like I said, but I am fascinated to see what happens.
If you look back at the last couple of years in the regular season, LeBron gets up for Kobe. He gets up for Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
He doesn't really get up for Carmelo Anthony, which I think is notable.
It never has, really.
Yeah, he gets up for Chris Paul. He gets up for these guys.
Yeah.
And I think that the fact that Paul George has gotten to where he's at, and it's really weird because LeBron doesn't have the same idea of Jordan, which is, I'm going to destroy you. It's more of a, you are so good at basketball, you deserve my best.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to play hard because I'm so impressed with how good you are.
Yeah, it's a mutual respect.
Yeah, let's both give each other everything that we got, you know, versus Mike Malone and DeMarcus Cousins saying that in an airport.
As Anita Black's giving you the best that I got plays over the PA system.
Exactly. Over under technicals tonight. Over under 1.5.
Oh, I just said Anita Black. I meant Anita Baker. I don't know where Anita
Black. Or Aloe Baker. Black, the guy that does the KG commercial.
Yeah, that might be it. That's what I meant. Technicals. Player technicals, not like delay game stuff.
Right, actual infractions.
I'm going 3 technicals.
3 techs.
We're getting one from Lance Stevenson for sure. I think
I might have to bump it to 2.5 because you're gonna get the ref. You're gonna get one for the refs and probably 2 for a fight.
Yeah, I'll go. And I'm gonna call them out: Stevenson, Birdman, David West. David West is gonna be a yelling at the refs one.
Yeah,
we might get a Birdman Stevenson double tech.
I miss Tyler Hansbrough for this game. Luis Scola is so much better.
Well, if we could get this expansion draft organized
exactly
before tonight, we could get Tyler right over there.
Exactly. I'm gonna be thinking about this all day now. Thinking about the teams that are gonna take.
I'm expecting 3,000 words by 5 p.m. on the site about this.
The Heat get Kyle Lowry and everyone gets pissed.
Including Mario Chalmers.
Like the Thunder get Rajon Rondo, and then still Derek Fisher plays over him.
Oh.
Before we go, I did have this thought when we were talking about Mavericks earlier. Samuel D'Alembert, Jose Calderon for Ashik and Lin. Nah, you can't do that because of the poison pills with both of them.
Well, I don't really get why Houston would do that anyway.
Well, I think Calderon's probably an improvement. Is Calderon an improvement over Lin?
Yeah, technically he is.
He doesn't need the ball. Pure passer.
Lin's a better defender, though, right?
I think so, but yeah. everyone likes Jose Calderon, so they tend to gloss over it.
I mean, I like Calderon, but he's an atrocious defender.
Terrible.
Yeah. No, I don't like that for Houston. I'd rather have Lin's attack. And I wouldn't want to put D'Alembert on that team. Not a terrible idea. I don't like D'Alembert on that team, even as a backup. Really?
How come?
I think if you're going to have him, you have to have him as like more of a main cog, as like a Band-Aid from year to year. Because you put him in that reserve role, that secondary role, and then he's going to start. I don't know, he just gets very D'Alembert-y.
D'Alembert. Sounds like a cereal.
Yeah, it's my least favorite cereal is D'Alembert.
D'Alembert Crunch.
Yeah, D'Alembert Crunch is just there's too much bitterness, too much sorrow. I try to pour it into the bowl, and on the way down, it gets knocked out of the bowl. It gets goaltended.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Yeah, so, we've got an hour and 10 minutes. We're probably good.
I think we're probably good. Yeah. So. All right, we'll see who wins tonight. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.